All right, all my coffee lovers, listen up, because Trade Coffee is changing the way that you experience coffee at home. They continuously curate a wide variety of coffees from the best small batch specialty roasters in the US and then make personalized recommendations based off of what you like or may like to try. Every bag is roasted to order and shipped fresh to you by one of their over 50 partners. Now, I'm someone who truly values comfort and convenience, and having my Trade Coffee on a subscription so I don't have to think or worry about it truly does make my life so much easier, and I know every morning I'm waking up to a delicious cup of coffee. So do you love coffee as much as I do? Because if so, you need to try Trade today. For a limited time, you can enjoy a free bag and up to $15 off select plans when you visit my link, drinktrade.com/killer. That's drinktrade.com/killer for a free bag and up to $15 off select plans. That's drinktrade.com/killer.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hello, everyone. What is up? Welcome back to another episode of Killer Instinct. Thank you guys so much for joining me here today. If you're new here, hi, my name is Savannah, and I'm your host of Killer Instinct. Before we get started, make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button. That way you never miss an episode. We post weekly here on the podcast every single Wednesday. You guys are not going to want to miss it. We also post the video version on YouTube on Wednesdays as well, so make sure you are subscribed. Now, you guys, happy May. We have officially started a new month. And if you've been keeping up, you know exactly what that means. However, if you have not, this year we have dedicated every single month to a different true crime category. January, we covered unsolved cases. February, we covered killer couples. March, we covered celebrity cases. April, we covered serial killers, and now we are in May. So, with the beginning of a new month, it means the beginning of a new true crime category. And the category that we are going to be focusing on for the month of May is family annihilators. We are going to be covering cases of people who have committed some of the most heinous crimes on their own flesh and blood. Now, these cases for me in particular are truly some of the most baffling to me. Whenever I see someone who is capable of taking the lives of their own family members, whether that is parents taking the lives of their own children, vice versa, siblings onto their whole family, we are going to be diving all into it in the month of May. And we are starting off with a wild one today, you guys. As you can tell by the title, we are talking about a man named Ronald Gene Simmons. Now, Ronald Gene Simmons actually committed the worst mass murder in Arkansas committed by a single person. It is a horribly tragic case, and I'm very interested to hear your input on it. So with that being said, let's jump right on into it today. Ronald Gene Simmons was born on July 15th, 1940 in Chicago, Illinois, to his parents, Loretta and William Simmons. Ronald grew up going by the name Gene, and growing up, Gene never really got the chance to know his biological father because he passed away right before Gene had turned 3 years old of a stroke. Now, a year after his passing, Loretta did end up meeting a new man who was also named William. Now, this man's name was William Griffin, and he was a civil engineer for the U.S. Army. William was relocated to Little Rock, Arkansas in 1946, so because of this, he, Loretta, and Gene packed up their belongings and moved to Arkansas. Now, because William was in the military and the family moved around quite a bit, it definitely made it hard for Gene to have long-lasting friendships. He really suffered socially because of this. He struggled fitting in. He struggled making friends. He really felt like an outcast because he just felt like he didn't have anyone who related to him, and he never felt like he belonged anywhere. When Gene himself was 17 years old, he decided to drop out out of high school, and he enrolled in the Navy and was immediately stationed in Washington. Now, Gene joining the Navy was definitely a surprise to most people. Not really anyone thought this was something that he was going to be doing. He definitely was a little bit more of a troublemaker growing up. He would rebel quite a bit, oftentimes because he just felt a lack of control in his own life, and so it caused him to go out and rebel and cause trouble. And so because of this, no one thought that Gene was actually going to enjoy being in the Navy. In fact, his parents really forced him to do this, and they did so because they wanted it to be more of a punishment for Gene. They thought that if Gene enrolled in the Navy, that he would learn boundaries and rules and structure, and they thought that he would not like that. They thought that it was going to be a punishment for him. However, to everyone's surprise, Gene actually excelled in the Navy. This was the first time that Gene ever felt like he had somewhere where he belonged. It was the first time where he ever felt like he had a structure in his life. And this is when the concept of structure and control really entered into Gene's world. It was something that he had not had in the past because he was constantly moving around. He was constantly going from place to place, having to pick up and move to all of these different areas with his family. He never felt that structure in his life. However, when he joined the Navy, that's all it was. It was all structure all the time. It was boundaries. There were rules. There were certain things that Gene had to abide by. And he really started to rely and depend on this structure, and he thrived in it. Now, when Gene was 20 years old, he ended up meeting a woman named Becky Ulibarri, and the two got married on July 4th, 1960 in New Mexico. Now, it was during Gene's marriage to Becky that we first get a real glance into his controlling behavior existing outside of just the Navy. Gene was incredibly controlling when it came to Becky. He controlled what she wore. He controlled how much makeup she wore. Gene had a set rule for Becky, which was that she was only to wear her hair slicked back. She was to wear no makeup, and she always had to wear button-up shirts. So he was very, very strict and manipulative and controlling with her. He would not allow Becky to get any mail that was sent to the house. She wasn't allowed to even tell her family where she was living because he did not want her family to have access to her in that way. He really tried to isolate her from everyone. Now, Becky's family really did ask themselves in the beginning why Becky was allowing this behavior to go on, why Becky was allowing Gene to treat her this way. However, they ultimately realized that Gene had been controlling and emotionally manipulating Becky from the very beginning. He had gotten Becky to a point where he made her believe that she was incapable of being independent, of living a life outside of him. And that was something that once that thought entered Becky's mind, Gene just continuously drilled that thought in, and Becky was living under Gene's control. Now, outside of all of the controlling behavior, Becky and Gene did have 7 children together. They had 7 children. They had 3 sons and 4 daughters. And Gene stayed in the military until 1963 when he left the Navy to join the Air Force. In total, Gene spent about 20 years in the military, and in 1979, he officially retired. Now, during his time in the Air Force, he received the Bronze Star Medal, among other awards for his service. When he retired, he left with the rank of Master Sergeant. And after retiring, Gene and Becky moved their 7 children to a remote area of New Mexico called Cloudcroft. Now, to give you an idea of Cloudcroft, in 2022, the population of this town was about 750 people. So we are talking about a very, very small community. This is, again, a very everyone knows everyone type of town. And for Gene, this was the first time in his life that he had no structure, or at least no military structure. And because he didn't have that anymore, because that wasn't being implemented anymore by the military itself, this really forced Gene to crack down even more onto his own family and the control and order that he set up in his own household. He felt like he needed to implement it in his own personal life and in his kids' lives and his family's life in order to still feel like he had some part of that. So like I mentioned, Gene and Becky had 7 children together, and those children were named Ronald Gene Jr., Loretta, Eddie, Marianne, Becky, Billy, and Sheila. Now, all of the children, as well as Becky and Jean, were living together in Clovercroft at this time. And we're looking at about 1980 at this point. And this was right after Jean had retired from the military. But there was also something else in the family that was going on. People around were beginning to notice that Jean was getting a little too close for comfort with his 17-year-old daughter, Sheila. It was clear to everyone, the rest of the Simmons children, the people out in public, their friends, the rest of their family members, that Jean very much favored Sheila, but it was to an excessive point. It wasn't just your typical father-daughter bond, father-daughter relationship. Jean very much singled Sheila out from a very young age. He always wanted to spend time with her. The two were very touchy together in public, and it was said by the people that saw them together that Jean and Sheila acted more like husband and wife than they did father and daughter. And then when Sheila was 17 years old, she ended up becoming pregnant. Now, this was a shock to everyone, and the entire Simmons family did try and keep this under wraps for as long as they possibly could. However, once Sheila did start showing in her pregnancy, this secret was out. And whenever anyone would speak to Sheila about the pregnancy, she really just pushed it to the side. She didn't answer a lot of questions, and it was very clear to everyone at this point what was really going on here. And that was that Jean was fathering a child with his own daughter, that Sheila was pregnant with her father's child. And this was obviously something that Jean was not wanting out in the public. It was something that he did not want other people to know. However, again, this was a very small community. People saw how Jean and Sheila treated each other. Sheila had been groomed by her father for a very long time, and people were starting to put the pieces of this puzzle together. And instead of just sitting back and watching this all happen, in August of 1981, Jean's oldest son, who is Ronald Jean Jr., he went to the authorities to report his dad on charges of incest after he claimed that his dad was the father of Sheila's baby. Now, investigators did approach Sheila to ask her about this and just ask a few questions, but she immediately denied all of it. Like I said, she was very much manipulated by Jean at this point, and she denied everything to the police. She also really couldn't give an alternate explanation as to who the father of her child was. And the one thing that everyone knew about the Simmons family was the control that they were all under at the hands of their father. They were not allowed to have social lives. They were not allowed to go out. They were not allowed to have friends. Jean had controlled his children's every single move. Sadly, this was not the case of Sheila going out and rebelling and having a fling with a boy. This was definitely something that was far more sinister than that. And when police did try and question her about it, like I said, she adamantly denied everything, and she also refused to press charges on her father. But regardless, Jean still was indicted on charges of incest. Now, at this point, Jean was frantic. He began worrying that he was going to be arrested, and so he decided to make a plan that him and his family were going to flee the town and run from the authorities. So he ended up packing his whole family up and moved to Arkansas. Now, once they got to Arkansas, they did relocate a couple of times. Again, this was in Jean's attempt to run away from the authorities and have them lose track of him, which ultimately was successful. It ended up working because at this point, the authorities in New Mexico were not able to locate Jean, and because of this, the incest case against him really went cold. Now, Sheila did end up having this baby. She had a daughter named Sylvia, and the two remained living with the Simmons family once they relocated. All right, all my coffee lovers, listen up, because Trade Coffee is changing the way that you experience coffee at home. They continuously curate a wide variety of coffees from the best small batch specialty roasters in the U.S. and then make personalized recommendations based off of what you like or may like to try. Every bag is roasted to order and shipped fresh to you by one of their over 50 partners. When you go to drinktrade.com, you will answer a quick survey so Trade can get a good understanding about your flavor profile. Then through that, they curate what coffees they think that you will like best, whether that's dark roast or decafs or espressos, cold brew or iced coffee. You are bound to discover the best coffee to suit your taste because Trade has over 450 coffee options to choose from. Then when you sign up for Trade subscription service, you will be shipped new coffees every single month, so you can just sit back, relax, and sip on delicious coffee. Now, I'm someone who truly values comfort and convenience, and having my Trade coffee on a subscription so I don't have to think or worry about it truly does make my life so much easier, and I know every morning I'm waking up to a delicious cup of coffee. Now, right now, my personal favorite is the Good Citizen coffee that I receive from Trade, because not only is the taste absolutely delicious with notes of milk, chocolate, and nuts and spice, but it was also roasted right here where I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and I love knowing that it was roasted locally. So do you love coffee as much as I do? Because if so, you need to try Trade today. For a limited time, you can enjoy a free bag and up to $15 off select plans when you visit my link, drinktrade.com/killer. That's drinktrade.com/killer for a free bag and up to $15 off select plans. That's drinktrade.com/killer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, after moving around in Arkansas a couple of times, Gene and Becky finally found a place that they were going to settle down at. Now, this was a 13-acre property. It really was a compound that Gene called Mockingbird Hill. Now, in order to continue to implement this control over his family and over his personal life, Gene really did everything that he could in order to block out the outside world. He did this by forcing his children to build cinder block walls in front of the house. He also did this by putting barbed wire fence along the property lines. That way, no one could get in. And he also did this so that his children would not be able to just go out and play wherever they wanted to or just play with the other neighborhood kids. The home also did not have any indoor plumbing whatsoever, so the children were forced to build outhouses for the rest of the family. They were also not allowed to socialize whatsoever. I know I've touched on this already. However, once they moved to Mockingbird Hill, these rules were enforced even more because now Gene was paranoid. He was frantic. He knew that he was already under watch by the authorities, and so he did not want to have any slip-ups at this point. And so because of this, the kids were under very strict guidelines. They were to go to and from school and not to talk to anyone along the way. Gene also followed his children once they would get onto the bus, which is how they got to and from school. He would wait until his children got on the bus, drive behind and follow the school bus as it drove to the school, and watched his kids get off the school bus. Now, if you're sitting here wondering why he wouldn't at that point just take his children to school himself, I am not sure. However, that is what he did. Now, Mockingbird Hill was in a town called Dover, Arkansas, and similar to Cloudcroft, New Mexico, Dover was a very, very small community. It was an everyone knows everyone type of town. But not only that, everyone in Dover had a sense of community and camaraderie, and everyone was very nice and kind to each other. And Gene and the rest of the Simmons family really stuck out like a sore thumb amongst everyone in Dover because they were the complete opposite. Now, when it came to Gene's wife, Becky, and the rest of their kids, they all were just doing what their father and their husband want of them. They were just doing what Gene had told them to do. But Gene himself was really, cold to everyone in the community. Whenever he would see anyone, he would not say hello. He would not wave when someone was driving by. It was a Southern charm type of community where everyone was nice and kind and welcoming. But Gene, again, was the complete opposite. And so because of that, he really did stand out in the community. So he really had the opposite effect of what he was hoping to achieve. He was hoping to blend in. He was hoping to not raise any red flags, not raise any suspicion, not raise any question. But because of how he was acting and his behavior, it really, again, did the opposite. Now, over the course of the next few years, Gene did work a few odd jobs here and there. However, on multiple occasions, he would be reported for making inappropriate sexual advances at his coworkers. So because of that, it made it hard for Gene to maintain any sort of job. He would get let go of a lot of the jobs that he would have. So now I want to move on to 1984. And this is when things really start going downhill for Gene. And there was a big, big defining factor in that. There was a big reason for this. Now, by this time, Gene's oldest children, which would be Billy and his daughter Sheila, the one that he had had the inappropriate relationship with and fathered a child with, Billy and Sheila had moved out of the house at this point. Billy had graduated from high school. He had moved on in his life. He was ready for the next chapter and he had moved out. Now, Sheila, however, was a little bit of a different story because a couple years before she moved out, Sheila ended up getting her first ever boyfriend. And this is going to be a man named Dennis McNulty. Now, immediately when Dennis and Sheila met, Sheila was absolutely head over heels for Dennis. If you think about it, she had never had a normal dating relationship, or a normal dating life. This was the first time that she was really ever allowed to have a boyfriend. And so because of this, over time, Sheila began trusting Dennis more and more, and she began opening up to him about some of the troubles that were going on in her home life. Now, the two ultimately made plans to get married in 1984, which they did, and Sheila moved out of the house and moved to be with her now husband in a town called Camden. Now, this entire chapter of life, this phase of life of Sheila getting a boyfriend and then marrying Dennis, this was incredibly hard for Gene to come to terms with. And this was not your typical, I think this goes without saying at this point, but this was not your typical father being protective of his daughter and not wanting her to date because he's protective and he's looking out for his daughter. That was absolutely not what this was. People who saw what was going on said that Gene was acting as if Sheila was cheating on him, as if Sheila was having this affair. Again, they had such a convoluted and twisted relationship with each other at the hands of Gene, and now Sheila is finally ready and trying to move on with her life and break these cycles and break away from the toxicity that is her father, and Gene did not want to have any of it. In fact, it really sent Gene into a spiraling depression. Gene immediately turned on Sheila after she got married. He ended up writing her a letter saying that he would see her in the pits of hell. And this affected him so greatly that he ended up quitting his job and locked himself in his room. He spent all of his time locked away in his room and would only come out of the room to use the restroom. And he also would not speak to anyone else in the family. Now, with Sheila gone, Gene did try and replace the relationship that he had with Sheila with his other second eldest daughter, who was named Loretta, but Loretta stayed away from her father at all costs. She was also older than Sheila when Gene began sexually abusing her. The sexual abuse between Gene and Sheila was said to have started at a very young age when Sheila would be very vulnerable and easily manipulated. However, Loretta had a disdain against her father already and really tried to stay away from him at all costs, so she was not easily persuaded or just persuaded by him at all. Now, Gene's behavior definitely began to take a toll on his wife, Becky, as well. If you're sitting here wondering, what is his wife thinking about all of this? It definitely took a toll on her. Becky began writing letters to her eldest son, Billy, saying that she felt like a prisoner in her own home and that she wanted to find a way out and regain her freedom again and just get her life back. But her kids were her biggest fear. She didn't know how to do so without harming her kids. She didn't know how to start over over. She didn't know how to raise five children by herself at this point because the two oldest had moved out. She still had five in the home. She did not know how to do that. She felt so manipulated by Gene because, again, at this point, Gene had spent his entire life with Becky, constantly telling her that she was never good enough, making her feel like she was not good enough, making her feel like she was never going to be able to do anything or accomplish anything without him. So all of those things are racing through Becky's mind. However, after talking to Billy and after talking to some of her other family members, she started to think that maybe this was something that was possible for her. She started to consider the idea of a divorce. She started to consider the idea of really getting out and having a fresh start for her and her children. She was also afraid of the financial aspect of it all. Jean was the sole provider and she was a stay-at-home mom. However, Billy assured her that there was such thing as child support, that Jean would have to pay some sort of something to help contribute with raising the other children. And so she slowly was regaining her confidence with thinking that she could do this on her own. And so because of this, she did start forming a plan on how and when to leave Gene. Now, these thoughts for Becky really started in October of 1987. It's when she started seriously considering the idea of a divorce. However, around this time, you have Halloween, you have Thanksgiving, you have Christmas. The holidays are right around the corner, and Becky just put off the idea of divorce for a little bit, really to just get through the holidays with her family. So this all brings us to December of 1987, and this is around Christmas time, and the Simmons family was all planning on getting together for Christmas. And this was including the older children, which was Billy, Sheila, and at this point, Gene Jr., who had also moved out at the time. The plan was for everyone to come back, spend Christmas under one roof together. Christmas was a very special time in this household. It really was the only holiday that Gene allowed his family to celebrate. He got a Christmas tree and allowed all of the kids to decorate it. He also got Christmas gifts for all of his kids. So it was set out to be a very festive and joyful holiday. However, things took a sharp turn for the worst very quickly. This brings us to December 22nd. And on this day, Gene Jr. was staying at his parents' house and he had brought his three-year-old daughter, Barbara. Like I said, the older children were planning on coming to the Simmons home to celebrate Christmas. And Sheila and Billy and their families were coming a couple days later. Gene Jr. just came a couple days prior to Christmas. So he was the only child who was not living there at the time who had come back at this point. So Gene Jr. is there with his three-year-old daughter, Barbara, and then you have the rest of the younger kids. Now, December 22nd was actually the last day of school for the younger kids before Christmas break. So Gene got up, got all of the kids ready, and sent them off to school. That would be Loretta, Eddie, Marianne, and Rebecca. So all of them are off to school, and Gene comes back into the house where it is just him, Becky, Barbara, and Gene Jr. And again, it was the last day of school before the kids were off for Christmas break. It was supposed to be a very peaceful and festive holiday. However, it quickly turned into a nightmare when Gene grabbed a crowbar, walked into Gene Jr.'s room where Gene Jr. was sleeping, and began bludgeoning him over the head with the crowbar. Now, Gene Jr. did try and fight back. However, Gene then took out a .22 caliber pistol and shot Gene Jr. in the face 4 times. After murdering his son, Gene then went and found Becky, his wife, where he bludgeoned her as well with the crowbar before shooting her 2 times. Then, when it came to 3-year-old Barbara, Gene strangled her to death. Afterwards, Gene moved the 3 bodies into a shallow grave that he had previously forced his younger children to dig weeks prior. And that's something to remember here. Gene had been planning this out for weeks. This was not something that was an off-the-cuff decision. This was not a random thing. This was all premeditated by Gene. Now, after Gene had moved the three bodies of his wife, son, and granddaughter, he then waited for his younger children to come home. And while the younger children were all excited to be off from school, it was Christmas break, little did they know what they were about to walk into. Once the children got home, Gene told all of them that he had presents for them, that he wanted to give them one by one, and they needed to wait their turn. Gene then called each child over individually, one by one, to give them their present, and little did they know that their present was their death sentence. Gene strangled each child and then drowned them in rain barrels. That would be 17-year-old Loretta, 14-year-old Eddie, 11-year-old Marianne, and 8-year-old Rebecca. And afterwards, he placed all of their bodies into the outhouse and dropped them into the cesspit. Now, the remaining members of the family, which were Sheila and her husband and their children, as well as Billy and his wife Renata, as well as their kids, they were all planning on coming over on December 26th. So this was going to be 4 days later. So Gene is staying at his house with the remains of all of his family members, all of his children, his wife, the bodies of everyone he is supposed to love and protect are with him for 4 days until December 26th, when the rest of the family arrives. Now, the timeline for this is a little bit vague because sadly, we do not know exactly how this was executed, because everyone who could tell us unfortunately did lose their lives. However, it is believed that the deaths of all of these people, Sheila, Dennis, Billy, and Renata, all happened very close together. It's believed that they arrived at the house around the same time, and while they were approaching the home, Gene took out his gun and shot all of them dead. Now, when it came to the younger children, Gene's grandchildren, Gene strangled every single one of them to death. And after murdering all of them, Gene then moved all of their bodies inside, except for Trey and Michael. He took both of the two-year-olds and wrapped them in plastic sheets before taking them to abandoned cars that he had on the property and leaving them in there. Now, when it came to the rest of the bodies, he moved those inside and covered them with coats. However, there was one body that he treated very, very differently, and that was Sheila. It was said that Gene had lifted Sheila from off of the floor and placed her on the dining room table, and then covered her body with his mother's, Gene's mother's, best dining room tablecloth. Now, I think it is very apparent as to why Gene would single out Sheila out of everyone else. Sheila was clearly, obviously, always his favorite. It was the one that he had the closest, most twisted, convoluted relationship with. It was the one that really was the catalyst for Gene's downward spiral. So it is not surprising that he would single her out like that. However, the details as to why he did that specifically in his own words, or what he did to Sheila afterwards, those are all very vague. We really don't have any information in regards to that, because as we will get to in a second, we are going to learn that Gene has never spoken out as to why he did what he did. So again, those questions, the why questions here, are all left unanswered. Now, later that day on the 26th of December, Gene left the home to go to a Sears store in Russellville, which was a town over, and he had picked up the Christmas gifts that he had purchased for all of his family. So he went to Sears, picked up all of the gifts that he ordered, and then went over to a bar before having a drink and going home. He stayed with the bodies of his family members for an additional 2 days, and then on December 28th, Gene woke up and drove to a Walmart in Russellville, where he purchased another gun. Afterwards, he drove to a law firm called Pearl, Eddie, and Gibbons Law Firm, which is where a woman named Kathy Kendrick worked as a secretary. Now, Gene had previously met Kathy and made advances towards her, which she rejected. So on the 28th, he walked into the law firm, shot Kathy, and walked right out. Gene then went to an oil company directly afterwards, where he shot a man named Russell Taylor. Russell was the owner of the mini mart that Jean had been working at and then resigned from only several days before the murder spree began. Jean quit his job on the 18th of December and the murders began on the 22nd. So he went in and shot Russell. However, luckily, he did end up surviving. Now, Jean did end up killing another person in that building named James Chaffin, and James was the only victim of Jean's who was a stranger to him. So sadly, it seemed like James's circumstances were really just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, the third stop that Jean made was to the mini mart itself. Remember, last time before this, he went to the oil company office. This time, he went to the mini mart itself and shot two more people. However, luckily, they did survive from their injuries. Now, Jean's final target was the office of Woodline Motor Freight Company, and this is where he shot his former supervisor twice. However, luckily, she did survive. Now, at this point, Jean ended up holding one of his former co-workers at gunpoint and forced her to call the police. Now, when police arrived, this was really shocking for everyone. When police arrived, Jean surrendered without resistance. Now, it said that the reason that Jean just handed himself over to police was because he was worried that if this escalated into a shootout or if he got into a fight with the police and he did get shot, Jean's biggest fear was getting shot and then not getting killed. He was feared that if he got shot, he would remain brain dead and in a vegetative state, and he did not want that to happen. That was his biggest fear. So instead, he just handed himself over to police. Now, the murder spree on the 28th of December was Jean's final spree, and it was said that this was his way of getting back at all of the people that he believed wronged him. At this point, Jean knew that he was going to be going to prison. He knew that he had murdered his entire family. He knew that he was not going to be able to get away with this, and so he thought he might as well just take out everyone else who he believed had wronged him as well. Now, when Jean was arrested, he refused to talk completely. When police asked Jean about his family, he began to get a little emotional, and this worried police entirely, and they knew that they needed to go and check on Jean's family. They needed to do a welfare check on the remainder of Jean's family at the Mockingbird Hill home, just to make sure that his family was alive and well, which obviously at this point we know was sadly not the case. When police arrived to the home, they found the bodies of Billy, Renata, Sheila, Dennis, and Sylvia laying on the living room floor. Now, after talking to extended family members, police learned that there were nine other children, as well as Becky, who were still unaccounted for. They were still missing. So at this point, police brought in an entire search team to scour the entire property. Police also ended up uncovering Trey and Michael, who were found soaking wet in garbage bags in those abandoned cars, as I mentioned earlier. And through this search, all of the other children and Becky were ultimately discovered as well. And police at this point learned that all in all, Jean murdered 14 of his own family members. Now, Jean from the very beginning said that he did not want to plead insanity. He was very adamant on the fact that he wanted the death penalty from the very beginning for what he did. However, regardless, he did go under psychiatric evaluation, and it was found that he was in fact sane enough to sit trial. Now, leading up to the trials, Jean refused to speak with police at all, and he did not ever give an explanation as to why he did what he did, what made him get to this breaking point, or how he carried out the murders. So again, he did in fact end up going on trial, and his first trial was for the death of Kathy Kendrick and James Chaffin, and he was found guilty for those murders on May 12th, 1988. During his sentencing, Jean was sentenced to death, and he made a statement where he said, quote, "I, Ronald Jean Simmons, want it to be known that it is my wish and my desire that absolutely no action by anybody is taken to appeal or in any way change this sentence. It is further respectfully requested that this sentence be carried out expeditiously," end quote. Now, Jean then went on trial for the murder of his 14 family members and was found guilty for that on February 10th, 1989, and again was sentenced to death by lethal injection. injection. Now, during this trial, Gene definitely showed his anger. He lashed out multiple times. He was removed from the courtroom for punching the prosecutor and trying to grab the deputy's handgun. So he definitely got explosive during this trial. However, from the very beginning, like I said, Gene was always very vocal about wanting the death penalty, even though he was not vocal about the details of the murders, why he did what he did. The one thing that he was very adamant on from the very beginning was that he wanted to be sentenced to death. He did not want life in prison. He did not want to go on parole. He did not want any of that. He wanted death from the very beginning. Now, on a separate note, when Sheila's husband's family, so when Dennis's family was going through Sheila and Dennis's home after they passed, the McNulty family discovered 20 different audio tapes. These audio tapes were each 90 minutes long, and they were from Gene to Sheila. Now, on one of the tapes, Willie Nelson's song, You Were Always On My Mind, is playing, and Gene is heard sobbing in the background. So it's quickly learned that all of these tapes were Gene's attempt at getting his daughter's attention back and regaining that relationship that he had with her. Now, after Gene's conviction and while he was in prison, there was a news anchor who Gene had seen on TV from jail, and immediately she caught his attention because he thought she looked strikingly similar to Sheila. Gene ended up writing her a letter on October 24th, which was Sheila's birthday. The news anchor was named Ann Jansen, and when she got the letter from Gene, she really saw this as a potential opportunity to get some answers out of Gene, to be able to talk to him a little bit, because up until this point, Gene had not done any interviews, he had not spoken with anyone, he did not speak to police. However, the one person that he agreed to speak to was Ann, and the reason that he did that was because Ann reminded him of Sheila. Now, Ann did end up meeting Gene on several different occasions. She described her interviews with him and described Gene himself as being someone who was very intense. Ann had asked Gene in these interviews if he had missed his family, to which he responded with yes. She also asked him if he regretted what he did or if he had any remorse for what he did, to which he also said yes, absolutely. However, when asked why he did what he did, he said he was not going to comment on that. Now, for his death row meal, Gene requested a filet mignon steak, 2 raw onions, tomato slices, a banana, 6 rolls, and a 7-Up soda. On June 25th, 1990, Gene Simmons died by lethal injection, and none of his relatives claimed his body, so he ended up being buried in a field in Arkansas. That, you guys, is the case of the Simmons family and Ronald Gene Simmons. As I said from the beginning, this case is truly horrific. To think that Gene or anyone has the capability to murder at all, let alone murder their own family members, let alone murder 14 of their family members, to strangle the youngest of the children, the physical strength and endurance that takes to strangle all of those young, innocent children, and then to shoot in cold blood, kill in cold blood his own children. The case from start to finish is all sorts of messed up. I'm really interested to hear what you guys have to say about it. But with that being said, you guys, that is all for me today. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode of Killer Instinct. Again, if you're new here, hi, my name is Savannah and I'm your host of Killer Instinct. Make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button. That way you never miss an episode. We post weekly here on the podcast every single Wednesday. You're not going to want to miss it. I'll be back next week with a brand new one for you guys. And until then, stay safe. Bye, guys.